Jazz, 91.9 WCOK, Atlanta's jazz station, Jamal Ahmed, and the Soul of Jazz on this Friday afternoon. And we just heard music coming from Carmen Lundy, and she called that one Grateful Part 2. We've got about 35 on the backside at 3 o'clock, and I'm very honored right now to have a gentleman I have been respecting for a very, very long time, and he's actually here in our city because, of course, it's a very special weekend here in the city of Atlanta. Of course, we are celebrating today the Earth Day of the legendary Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And as part of the special MLK weekend event, Arts at Tech at Georgia Tech are presenting Roger Guinevere Smith in Rodney King, the one-man play. And I'm actually honored to present Mr. Roger Guinevere Smith. How you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm honored to be here, especially on this special day in this special city. We're bringing the king to the king, the meeting of the kings, Rodney King and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday we are very righteously and rightfully celebrating today all over the world.
Exactly, exactly. Now, first of all, Roger, I want to talk to you about you, because you were born in a very special place. You were born in Berkeley, California. Or came up in Berkeley, California, am I right?
Born in Berkeley, California, and conceived in Monterey, California, at an NAACP convention.
Oh, wow. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
I was there in a certain way. Yes, I was there.
Wow, wow. And I mean...
but my mom will confirm that with you.
Well, I'll leave that up to her to mention that. But I mean, when you think about Berkeley, because that's one of my favorite places in America. I mean, it's just a beautiful place physically, but also spiritually. A lot of great creative energy has been birthed. And it's interesting that you say Monterey, because I think of the Monterey Pop Festival, which birthed so much greatness out of that. But talk about growing up in Berkeley, California, and how that inspired you to be who you are.
Well, I'm a first generation Californian. My father was from Portsmouth, Virginia. My mother from Charleston, South Carolina. They came to California to seek the opportunity that they were denied in the Jim Crow South. And Berkeley is a very special place, I think, especially for my mom. She went there initially to study, and my parents met at a holiday party. My father was practicing law in San Diego, California at the time. And we spent my early years in Berkeley and then moved to Los Angeles. Mm. And in fact, this morning, I had a dream about Don Cornelius. And the dream was that Don Cornelius had a van with the Soul Train logo painted on the outside of it, and he was trying to get rid of it. And so he said, you know, I'm paying a lot for storage of this van. And it was very nice on the outside, but it was a little worn on the inside. And he said, would you be interested in this vehicle?
Wow.
And... It's very interesting because, you know, when people ask me about this piece, in particular Rodney King, they say, well, where did your movement come from? Did you study Tai Chi? Did you study Bhutto? I said, no, I studied in the Don Cornelius school every Saturday morning on Soul Train. So,
which is really poignant, because when you think about the Soul Train dancers, that second wave, because he started in Chicago but moved to Los Angeles, the kids in L.A. were very unique when you compare their dancing style to other dancing styles all across America.
Yes, we locked and we popped and we popped and we locked.
Yeah, all that came from the moonwalk, right. All that stuff came from you guys, you know? But I want to talk to you too, Roger, because the first time, it's very, I won't use the word ironic, but I think it's very spiritual that you're here on this campus, Clark Atlanta University. The first film I saw you in was Spike Lee's School Days as a teenager. And this is the ground.
This is where it happened. In fact, my man Blake brought me over here and was doing kind of a guided tour of the film School Days. Okay, here's the corner where Sam Jackson confronted Lawrence Fishburne. And here's where the late, great Ossie Davis played the football coach at Mission College, and brought back a lot of really good memories. That was a historic occasion. Coming together with Spike for the first time, and we're still doing it. I was in Chirac most recently, and very happy to be a part of that.
I mean, but you've been a part of a lot of his films, I want to get to this piece because this is so profound. But before we get to that, how did you connect with Spike Lee? Because he has a knack for getting actors and actresses who are very soulful you know, not just African-American, but very soulful people who can portray a particular feel. And I think his, if his films had a color, it would be sepia, in my opinion. But how did you connect with him? How did that all come about?
Well, I was doing repertory theater at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I went to this film called She's Gotta Have It. And I sat through it twice, and I said, who is this cat? I gotta get together with him and see what he's doing next. So next thing for Spike was School Days, and I was able to wrangle a cattle call audition. I got in a line with 100, 200 other people, and I did a song, and I told a joke, and I did a little bit of the script, and he felt that I was demented enough to play a fraternity pledge at Mission College. So there we have it, and we're still working together.
And how was it working on with him on Do the Right Thing? Because I think your character in Do the Right Thing is still one of the most profound characters in modern film.
Oh, well, that's...
Really, I'm being honest.
Nice of you, thank you. Yes. Smiley was an improvised character. If you look at the script for Do the Right Thing, which was an Oscar-nominated screenplay, you will not see the character of Smiley. It's something that I completely improvised on set. All I knew was that I needed to have some postcards with Malcolm X shaking hands with Martin Luther King, and I needed some colored markers that I would personally colorize these things, and I had a little Walkman with the antenna up, and I always had a Malcolm X speech going, the ballot or the bullet, on this cassette tape. And beyond that, I had no idea where this character would go. But Spike, through his generosity and through our collaborative interests, gave Smiley a kind of opportunity to become the moral spine of the film.
Right.
And in fact, he's the arsonist. He's the guy who burns down the pizza parlor.
Right.
At the end of the film. Don't want to spoil it for those who haven't seen it, but I would assume that most of your listeners have seen Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
So to be here in Atlanta on Martin Luther King's birthday is really something else.
No, it is.
And now that image of Malcolm and Martin, which was an obscure image, has become, you know, just part of our iconography. Malcolm. Martin shaking hands.
That's beautiful, man. Absolutely beautiful. Well, I want to talk to you about this new piece, Rodney King, because
Rodney King.
And we were just talking off mic. This isn't your first endeavor as a one man ensemble. I saw you play Huey P. Newton many years ago, and I told you it went over my very young head. But as I grew up, I saw it again, and it was absolutely brilliant. And I'm so looking forward to seeing this. What was the impetus for you putting this together? Because we are now living in an age where all those things that happened to Rodney King are just happening over and over and over again in the past 3-4 years.
Yeah, Rodney King. I was very moved when we lost him. Father's Day, 2012. I had referenced Rodney King several times through my work over the last 20 some odd years, but I never met him. I didn't know him, but I wanted to know why it hit me so hard when we lost him, especially the way that we lost him, in the bottom of his swimming pool, in his backyard. And so, meditating on Rodney King for 4 or 5 weeks, I had, I suppose, the audacity to step on stage and ask those same fundamental questions at the Bootleg Theater in Los Angeles, which is my home theater. And unlike other solo pieces that I've done on Huey Newton, for example, where the great baseball players Juan Marichal and John Roseborough, I did not try to approach Rodney King's family. I wanted to maintain the focus of the outsider. So I just dug into all those things that I would have access to through public access. And that's really what fueled this 58-minute performance, which is premiering tonight at the First Theater on the campus of Georgia Tech.
Exactly.
It's 8 o'clock tonight and 8 o'clock tomorrow. Two shows only. Go to arts.gatech.edu.
That's right. That's right. Or you can just go to the box office over there at the First Center, which is a wonderful venue. But I want to talk to you about Rodney King, because he is probably one of the most unlikely individuals to fall into that space of inspiring so many people to see that social injustice was still very much alive in the late 20th century.
Absolutely. He was a common man who was placed in an uncommon circumstance. He was beaten by the Los Angeles Police Department March 3rd, 1991. April 29th, 1992, those officers, Kuhn, Powell, Brasino, and Wind, who were accused of beating him unjustly, were acquitted in Simi Valley, California. And the response to that acquittal was historic. It was the largest conflagration in United States history. Some 50-some-odd people lost their lives, and of course millions of dollars in property values went up in flames. And it was Rodney King who had been beaten, who had to endure the echoing refrain of not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. It was he who stepped up on May Day, May 1st, 1992, and asked, can we all get along? Can we get along? Can we get along? Can we stop making it so horrible for the older folks and the kids? And he stopped the riot. That other King never stopped a riot.
Mm.
Rodney King stopped the riot. And he could have gone up there and say, hey, burn it down. And he could have done it, I think, with some authority. But he didn't. Mm. He reached deep into his humanity and said, hey, we're all stuck here for a while. Let's try to work it out.
Mm.
Let's try to be the. And he never got there when he said, let's try to be the dot, dot, dot. I think he wanted to say, let's try to be the change that we envision or something like that, but he couldn't.
Mm.
He was disappointed. He was brain damaged. He was drunk. But I think that he came up with one of the great American speeches.
Yeah, and I want to get to that. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with actor Roger Guinevere Smith, who's talking about his one-man play, Rodney King, which is premiering tonight over there at the First Center for the Arts on the campus of Georgia Tech. When you talk about that phrase, can we all just get along?
It's not just. That's a diminutive.
Mm.
He gets misquoted a lot. So, he never said just.
What did he say?
He said, can we all get along? Can we get along? And then at the end of the speech, he answers his own question and says, yes, we can get along. We can get along. We just have to, work it out.
Mm-hmm. But when you look at that, I remember when he said that, and I remember the reaction from a lot of leftist factions in the African-American community and their reaction to that was, that's weak.
I quote Willie D of the Ghetto Boys, who, did a rap entitled F. Rodney King, where he's, very much of that mind, that this is weak. This is not the machismo that we would expect of a man who had, suffered a beatdown at the hands of the LAPD. It's a very complicated position that Rodney King was in. Mm-hmm. Because here he's, he's being beaten by the LAPD, and in a way he's always also being beaten by people who didn't feel that he lived up to their expectations.
Right, right. And I mean, when you look at Rodney King, that moment is a very significant moment for him, but he had to live his entire life after that. He had to live for 20 years after that and deal with the repercussions of that. And he also had a lot of issues during that time. What did you learn about Rodney King post that speech?
It was all the more tragic that we lost him, when we lost him, how we lost him, because that was the spring, that was the 20th anniversary of the riot / uprising / insurrection / rebellion. He published a book, an autobiography entitled Rodney King, The Riot Within. He was doing public appearances. He was on a book tour. He was doing interviews. And those of us who cared about him said, yes, this is great, because Rodney King is finally conquering his demons. It was drinking that led him into the clutches of the LAPD in the first place, and he'd be the first person to admit that.
Mm.
He was drunk driving because He had a job to go to on Monday morning. It was Saturday night, and he was celebrating, and he was listening to De La Soul.
Wow. Really?
He wasn't listening to Public Enemy. He wasn't listening to N.W.A. He was listening to De La Soul,
which is
Medallions. No go.
No go.
Hanging out with Paz, hanging out with Mace. Buddy,
all in my face. You know, what's really interesting about that,
yeah.
There's a very interesting, I never knew that, because when you think about De La Soul was, they were considered the hippies of hip hop. They were the days, they presented what they call the Daisy Age. Of peace, love. They were anti-machismo. And he's listening to this group.
Right.
Wow.
And singing along with his two friends.
Interesting.
Yeah, after consuming countless numbers of 40 ounces of Old English.
Interesting. Well, so what did you, after you did, you put this whole thing together, what was your intention? What did you want the audience to walk away with after they witness this piece that you're going to present this evening and tomorrow evening, entitled Rodney King?
Hopefully it's an introduction to a man who lives beyond the myth. This is a guy who skied, a guy who surfed, a guy who loved the water in all its forms. His father, who was nicknamed the Kingfish, taught him how to fish, taught him how to swim. And tragically and biblically, Rodney King lost his father to drowning as well. He discovered him when he was a teenager, drowned in his bathtub, inebriated. So he, Rodney King, is a second generation alcoholic drowning victim.
This is very heavy.
It's a very complicated, it's a very complicated story. And as you say, yes, of course, he had to live, you know, beyond the notoriety of that night, right? And you know, he dabbled in hip hop. He was on celebrity rehab. He was on celebrity boxing. He actually boxed an ex-cop in Philadelphia and won.
The irony of that.
Yeah. Well, he was supposed to box one of the guys who beat him, but he stepped down, Lawrence Powell. He was supposed to have boxed Rodney King. So he became a kind of entertainment, as it were. And Can We All Get Along became kind of a punchline to a joke, right? And
I mean, it was a serious punchline.
Yeah.
Still is.
Yeah.
Wow. So when, you know, all this is said and done, and we look at Rodney King's life, And we tried to find the humanist in what he did, in the humanity, shall we say, in what he was going through. What do you see for yourself as Rodney King's greatest contribution to humanity?
I think the greatest contribution is the gospel according to Rodney King, the gospel that he delivered under great duress, May 1st, 1992, and that he was able to survive that beating, because if he hadn't been the strong man that he was, both physically and psychologically, he would never have survived what happened out there that night. They meant to kill him, and in fact the officers said that night, "We're going to kill you." Now that testimony was not entered into the court record until the civil case, because Rodney King was gagged for the first court case against officers Coon, Powell, Brasino, and Wind. His own lawyers didn't think that it would be strategic for him to stand up in the courtroom. And yet, when L.A. is burning, all those millions of dollars of property going up into flames, the same lawyers handed him a four-page typewritten speech. Then they wanted him to talk, to save Los Angeles, you see. And he rejected the speech, and he spoke from his heart. And when he went through his autopsy, having drowned in his backyard pool, it was determined that the only major abnormality in Rodney King was an enlarged heart.
Interesting. Very interesting. And, you know, you speak of Rodney King speaking from the heart, you know, and not dealing with something that was scripted. We were talking about jazz earlier and how jazz really inspires some of these pieces. And you're here at a jazz radio station.
And I'm looking at a beautiful portrait of Billy Strayhorn.
Yeah.
Who lived a very lush life.
And who, ironically, I mean, there's a lot of irony going on right now, but we were just talking about the life of Duke Ellington, and he was the muse for Duke Ellington for many years. He gave Duke Ellington another life musically.
I saw a beautiful clip of them this morning where Billy is playing with two hands, and then Duke comes at the end and puts two fingers on the keyboard to complete the song. Mm. And that's the way that those gentlemen work together.
Mm. Do you work from that same ethos of just freeness, of just going with the moment, of just going with the flow?
I hope to. I think I aspire to jazz. I don't know if I achieve it, but I've certainly learned more listening to Branford Marsalis, for example, playing April in Paris at four consecutive sets, but never playing it the same way, but still playing it with integrity and with emotional resonance.
Mm.
And I think that that's what we on stage are trying to do with words, to achieve what Strayhorn and Marsalis and Ellington,
wow,
and Etta James have achieved through rhythm and
that's
melody.
Right. That's right. That's right. Wow, that was that is the voice, shall we say, of the man Roger Guinevere Smith, who is presenting again a very special MLK weekend event entitled Rodney King. One-man play premiering this evening at 8 o'clock p.m. over there at the First Center for the Arts on the campus of Georgia Tech. Also, you'll be doing this tomorrow as well. Only two shows.
Two shows only for the King weekend, King and King. So please come on through. It is not a one-man show. It is a collaborative effort, always. Mark Anthony Thompson, my longtime musical collaborator, has done a tremendous bookending of this piece sonically, and I always am inspired by his work. Jose Lopez has provided a beautiful sound design, and of course I'm out on the road with Kirk Wilson, who makes things happen as my production manager. Whether we're in LA or Atlanta or New York or Amsterdam or London, we're trying to do it de la soul.
From the soul.
Black medallions, no gold.
That's a great way to end that one, my friend. If people want to find out about how to acquire tickets, you can go to the First Center box office, call 404-894-9600, or you can visit their website, www.arts.gatech.edu/First Center. God bless you, Roger Guinevere Smith, on all your future endeavors. And hey, man, if you ever come to Atlanta and want to do a set, man, on the air, let us know. We'll
I don't mean to say so what, but I'll be black.
All right, brother. You take care, Roger. God bless you, sir.
Thank you.